Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 2010 played Todd in the film Acts of Violence, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, RDM, Robbie McDunk, Robbie D., yours truly. Remember, everybody, you can get the full version of this whole podcast with lots of bonus material and all kinds of incredible perks and bonuses when you sign up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. All right. Acts of Violence. It sounds dramatic.
This is really interesting because the individual who basically wrote, directed everything, this is like a one-man project. It's an independent film, was a friend of my sister's at her church.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles. Yeah, that's how my sister knew this individual. His name's Il Lim. He's Korean-American. He had a martial arts school in Los Angeles for a long time. He taught a lot of different people, including, you know, some Hollywood celebs as well. Yeah. So Il's been in that world for a while. And then someone said, hey, why don't you write and direct your own project, you know, using your martial arts abilities? And he's like, oh, why not? So that's how I got connected, through my sister.
Out of all things.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. And he got one of his star students to be involved as well, which was Lili Sobieski. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. So Lili was in it and she was the lead. And basically we play these, I played this member, a mechanic. I'm like a car mechanic who has these friends. They're kind of blue collar guys. And we sort of get kind of wasted and we sort of come across Lili and we sort of do bad things to her. And
then
Il kind of takes revenge and comes after each one of us to take us out. So, So I basically, I think I actually live. I don't die, from what I recall. But
Do you have to do stunts and fighting?
No,
and stuff
but there's a scene where I'm basically covered. Il pours gasoline. I'm tied to a chair and he pours gasoline all over me and he lights a match and he's about to Joan of Arc me, basically, just throw that match on me. And so it's like, you know, it's a very dramatic and very stressful. Like for me, filming the scene where we basically sexually, you know, abuse and rape Lili's character, that was rough. Like I remember afterwards I was crying. Like I couldn't even it was just so hard to get into that space, you know what I'm saying, to where you're physically forcing someone or forcing something upon someone that they don't want. And it was just
And as much as we know it's all pretend, there's a quality about pretending that experience in a real way that just sticks with you. And I remember 10 years ago or more when 15 years ago, I guess now, when I was doing Chuck the first season, there was a writer's strike. And
everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Oh, and Mary Howard and Brad Yacobian from Voyager.
Yeah, our producers from Voyager,
Yeah, they were at that time producing Cold Case, the CBS crime
show. Right, yes.
And the strike happened, and so a lot of shows shut down. We had two or three scripts that we could keep filming.
Yeah.
But I saw Mary and Brad walking on the Warner Brothers lot one night. We were filming. And I was like, hey, guys, you know, what's going on? Are you guys still shooting? And they said, no, we've got nothing to do. We ran out of scripts. I said, oh, we're still filming. You should come in and see our big new Buy More set, the big set. I just wanted to show them the set.
Ah.
And they walked in and we were filming a scene with Zach Levi and the Nerd Herd gang. And they were, it was just a silly comedic scene. Brad and Mary watched that one scene and then they turned to me and they said, wow, this atmosphere is so different than our show, than Cold Case. We do shows about, you know, victims and
Yeah.
murders. You're
Yeah.
doing fart jokes, you know?
Yes,
So
completely
they were
different.
like, wow, this is so nice to be on a set where the environment is influenced by the content. So I can imagine doing a rape scene anyway.
Oh
That's
my God. Yeah. It was so, the energy around set filming that scene was so heavy and it's so oppressive. And plus, as an actor, I had to get myself to that place where it was capable for me to, you know what I'm saying, to get into that situation, which is, it's a horrible situation for everyone involved, basically. So, yes, that was difficult. Anyway, so that's acts of violence.
And your sister hooked you up.
I
That's so
know. And the one
funny.
before, remember,
My
it was
sister's
a
never hooked me up with
she
anything. I'm gonna call my sister as soon as we finish this. Be like, hey, where's a little help with my career? Well, this week our episode is Friendship One.
Yeah, exciting.
Season seven, Friendship One. We're getting very close to
I
the end.
think we have, after that, I think we have four episodes.
Oh my gosh. That's sad.
Can you
You
believe that?
know
Let me
what's
just
it's
verify that.
sad, but
Let's.
it's sad, but it's also exciting in a way that we are talking now about our new where we go from here. And we've got some cool announcements coming down the road about that. So everybody stay
Stay
tuned. Just
tuned.
because we
Stay
only have
tuned.
a few more left doesn't mean the Delta Flyers flies off to the sunset. We may be doing some more fun stuff in a whole new way. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Let's go watch this episode.
Friendship One, here we go.
All
Let's go
right.
watch it. We'll be right back with our memories and discussion of Friendship One.
Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. All right, everybody, we're back from watching Friendship One.
Yes.
No Q involvement, no John DeLancey,
I
but
was
that's
wrong
okay.
about that.
That's okay. That's all right. That's fine. Can we just jump right into our poetry synopsis?
Let's jump into poetry
Okay.
because, yes, this was an intense episode. So I think we need a little art.
And just so you know, my
Yes.
third verse of my haiku,
Yes.
I have three options for you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's okay. Here we
Okay.
go. My haiku for Friendship One.
Yes.
A mission at last. Away team taken hostage. Not Joe Carey. No. Okay. So not Joe Carey, no, is one. All right. Here's
Okay.
here it is with a second alternative line.
Okay.
I'll read it in whole so it kind of gives
Yeah,
you the whole
yeah. You were
feeling.
feeling
Okay.
creative on
I
this
was feeling super
episode. You
creative.
really
Yes.
were inspired.
Yes.
Okay.
A
Okay.
mission at last.
Yes.
Away team taken hostage. Justice for Carrie. Okay. That's
Interesting.
one. Okay. Now,
Okay.
this is the most poetic of all. Here we
I
go.
love it. Here we go.
A mission at last.
Yes.
Away team taken hostage. Gold is the new red. Meeting the new
Interesting.
red shirts, referring to red shirts dying on a
Yes.
mission, and it's the gold, Guyan
You
gold,
got
that
very
died.
inspired on this
I
episode.
did. I
You
really
really
did.
did.
I don't know what came over me, but okay.
Well, let's see how my limerick goes. I don't know
I'm.
if it was quite as inspired as I don't have three versions. I just
Are
got
you not
one.
proud of it? I'm sure you're proud of
I'm
it.
proud of it. I'm
Okay,
proud of it.
good.
Okay, here we
Let's
go.
go.
Here's our limerick for Friendship One. The Earth sent out the Friendship Probe Station, but it caused some pretty nasty radiation. Taking hostages is a real blow, so Janeway sent a torpedo. Turns out Voyager was actually their salvation.
Oh, you had to rhyme it all with shun. With shun.
Yes,
That's hard
probe
to do with shun.
station, nasty radiation,
Got
salvation.
a little full in the very beginning because you had to get all that out to say
Yes.
station. What does this say? Tell me this, the exact wording right before
The
station.
Earth sent out a friendship probe station,
That's it. Okay. The
but it
Earth sent out
caused
friendship probe
some
station. Yeah.
pretty nasty radiation.
Radiation. Yes. I like it.
Oh, I love a limerick.
Yes, a good
Yes.
limerick it is. Okay, so we were not right about director. We said
No.
Terry Wendell came back one more time. It was Mike Vihar, who we
I
love,
love
so
Mike
that's
Vihar. He
fine.
did
We're okay
such a
with
good
that.
job of this episode. Really great job. Yeah.
And writer, we're on the nose on that one. We got Taylor, right? But
Yeah,
we didn't get Fuller.
Michael Taylor co-wrote it with Brian Fuller, who, by the way, we may have mentioned this before, but Michael Taylor and Brian Fuller shared an office. So I know they were always talking with each other about stories and scripts. So, you know, really strong writing for this episode between those two office mates. Great job. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, you mean they shared the same
room? They had two desks.
Yeah, in the same room? Oh, wow. I thought it was an entryway with the foyer and then two different people that were their assistants in that area, and they each had a separate room. That's not the case. They were in the same room.
They were in the same room.
So much easier to collaborate when you're in the same room, right? Yeah. So that's okay. All right. Let's go through our guest stars right now. Ken Land, who played Varen, the very, very stubborn Varen.
Yes.
His very, very first credit was a 1994 soap opera by the name of Loving. Do you remember that show, Loving?
I do remember Loving because, because they filmed right down the street from All My Children.
Oh, these were like your neighbors.
I knew a bunch of the actors. It was an ABC soap.
Yeah.
Back when I did All My Children in the 80s, One Life to Live was nearby. Loving and Ryan's Hope were the shows that filmed very close. We were all, and the cast knew each other. And
so you guys would hang out with the other soap opera cast?
We'd run into each other.
Yeah.
I don't know, at maybe publicity events or I don't know, but I knew them.
Did you do soap opera conventions back then?
I did one, only one.
All right. Pre-Voyager, right?
Yeah. And I think I did, actually, now that I take it back, I did one soap opera appearance, which was like a con in New York City.
Yes.
With a bunch of soap actors.
Yeah.
Then I did some kind of like mall appearance where I was at the mall and just did a signing and met people. And
nice.
There was a couple of us. I think that was in Pennsylvania somewhere.
Okay.
Drove there kind of thing. And then once I went to Houston to Astro World? Is that what it was called? There was a theme park.
Okay.
I think it was. It was a theme park. And it was called Astro World.
Like opened by the Houston Astros owner, maybe? Astro
World. I don't know. Everything was at, like, the Astro Dome was a thing.
Yes.
And the Astros were a baseball team. And, you know, it was a
Did you do a meet and greet at the amusement park?
At the amusement park.
Wow.
And then we went to see a Jimmy Buffett concert. He was playing at the, what was it called? It was like Six Flags kind of vibe.
Did and you guys meet Jimmy Buffett backstage?
And he was a big fan of All My Children. And so that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Jimmy Buffett fans.
I did a few, but I mean, I could count on one hand the soap opera appearances. Whereas,
Star Trek, you couldn't count them at this point.
Okay. So he did Loving.
Was he? He was there after you. So 1994, right? So 1994, you were well, I mean, when you left All My Children, what year was
88.
Yeah. So your character Charlie was
84, 85 to 88, something like that.
Did your character go to a monastery or did he die? Like, how did he?
He went off to medical school to be a doctor. And then like 6 months later, they cast a much older actor who was like 15 years older than me, who came back as a doctor playing Charlie grown up. And now he's a doctor.
You crazy. Should have said, hey, come on, I could be Doogie Howser. You don't have to cast this guy, but
I had actually wanted to leave the soap. We've gone off on my career now, but
yeah, we have.
I went on the soap with a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but I was ready to be done.
Yeah.
And they said, no, don't leave. We want to sign you for they want to sign me for like a 3-year contract. And I said, no, don't want to do it for another 3 years.
Yeah.
I said, I could sign a 2-year contract as long as I have an out after 1 year.
Right.
So they said, okay. So we compromised on that. And then I did the show for one more year and I was ready to go. So I gave my notice.
Yeah.
I gave my notice and I was supposed to be done in October, I think, was when the contract timeline would end.
Right.
And they wrote me out in like August. Surprised me. And I was like, wait, what? No, I quit you first. You can't quit me.
Look at that. Oh, I love it.
But anyway,
Oh my gosh.
But okay, once I gave notice, they were like, get him out.
Get him out
move
now.
Move on.
15 years later, somebody else is going to play you. 15 years older than you.
They didn't waste one
moment. They did
moment
not wait.
After I've gave my notice, but you know,
this business can be so harsh sometimes, you know. Next up, we have John Prosky, who played Otrin. Otrin, it was the guy who was the scientist that we kind of have up on the ship on Voyager, right? That we fix his face and he looks great, right? Yeah. So 1986, a TV movie called A Case of Deadly Force. All right. We have Barry Hochwald playing the character of Bryn.
Yes.
Bryn, a 1993 episode of Class of 96, the television show Class of 96. There you go.
Okay. Yep.
Is Bryn the one that was pregnant? I'm guessing. Yeah, I think that's who.
I think she was. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yep. Next, we have Peter Dennis, who played Admiral Hendricks. Admiral Hendricks. He, in 1965, was on an episode of a TV series called No Hiding Place. Clearly a UK series, because that's where he's
British.
From. He's British.
It's gotta
exactly.
It's got to be a British show.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And cool. Unfortunately, we lost him in 2009 to cancer, April 18th. Mm. So, yeah. So he is no longer with us. We also have Ashley Edner, who played Young Yun, which, funny enough, was a guy in my high school graduating class, a Korean guy. His name was Young Yun, actually.
Young Yun. No,
and now so I'm talking about this character Young Yun, and that's the exact name of the guy I went to high school with. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, Young Yun. Young, or I should say Child Yun, maybe that's easier for me to say that.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, the little girl. She was
the
adorable.
Little girl. She was great. She was okay. Yes. 1998 episode of the TV series Step by Step. Step by Step. Yeah. Josh Clark, we know. Lieutenant Joe Carey. 1976 TV movie, The Other Side of Victory. 1976, The Other Side of Victory.
Josh Clark had been around a lot longer than I realized when we worked with him.
Same here.
Like,
no clue.
I had no idea that his credits went that far back, but we've talked about this before.
Yeah, he's an old
veteran actor.
Definitely. Absolutely. John Rosenfeld, who played technician number one.
Yeah.
His very first credit was the 1998 film Rat Bastard. Rat Bastard. Wendy Speak, who played technician number two, interestingly enough, her first credit is also 1998, just like John Rosenfeld, but not the same. Not Rat Bastard.
Yes.
It was actually a TV series called USA High. I don't know if you've ever
heard of it.
I've never heard of it either.
Never heard.
We also have David.
Wait, I want to go back to this technician number one. Is that the guy that looked kind of like a tall James Taylor? There was one guy.
No,
who I kept seeing an alien with the radiation stuff, but I kept going.
No,
that looked like James Taylor. Was James Taylor a fan? Did he do a cameo? I
gotta go
James
back and look
Taylor.
Which guy.
How did I miss this?
No.
Okay, maybe that was him.
Do you think James Taylor actually did a cameo on our show?
I don't know.
That would blow me away if that actually happened. We would have heard of that. We would have had a memo.
I think we would have known. Yeah. But this one guy, I think it's him, Technician One.
No.
I think he looks like James Taylor. Okay, never mind.
These guys are in the beginning of the episode. They play the aliens pre-radiation. Remember the two? They're detecting the probe coming into their atmosphere.
Yes.
That's who these guys are. Yeah.
Oh, so they had the hoods on. But then they take hoods off.
No, they had no hoods on. The very first shot showing the aliens detecting Friendship One probe as it's coming in. And the guy goes, it's entering our atmosphere. They have no clue
about what
the probe
before.
Is yet.
So I'm thinking of a different guy. I'm thinking
totally
of a radiation dude.
No, these are these are the only non-radiation people, unless you count, you know, Otrin. Looking less radiation
when
at the end, but no. But these guys are the very beginning. Yeah. So
okay.
Technician number two.
That's not James Taylor. Okay.
No.
Fine.
No. We also have David Gilardi. He's our final co-star. Alien Lieutenant. Alien Lieutenant.
Maybe that's him. Maybe that's James Taylor.
Maybe 1993 episode of the Untouchables, the TV series. So there was a TV series about.
I remember that.
I guess.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, so that's who David Gilardi is. Maybe Gilardi slash James Taylor.
Cast.
Yeah, big cast. But the last three were co-stars, of course. I did not.
This was James Taylor definitely had a co-star.
Opening shot. Do you like that CGI of the Friendship One probe kind of flying through space?
Yes,
pretty
and
darn
it looks
good.
Like Earth in the background. Like it's an M-class planet that looks really lush and the oceans and blue. It was a beautiful shot. Yeah.
Clearly this planet is pre-radiation. Yep. We don't know that at this point, but we do see some aliens in a control center. They're monitoring the probe, entering their atmosphere. And, you know, I'd like their equipment. It looked very different. It was like, I wonder kind of like who... a round view screen thing they had. It was kind of funky.
I wonder who did the voice on the probe. You know, when the probe has the recording, we the people of Earth greet you in the spirit.
You
know who it was?
To me?
Probably Loop Group.
Yeah, you think so? Because it kind of sounded like Cosmo Genovese to me.
Really? Maybe. Well, he would read it on stage. He would have read it. Cosmo would have read it. Actually, was Cosmo here the last season?
Oh, are you saying that he left? I feel like
Cosmo.
Oh, because Jan came in. Jan Rudolph came in. Oh, yes. My gosh.
So Jan
Cosmo was.
Yeah. He was retired.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
So we've got the alien scene, the opening scene. Then we go to opening credits, which again, I love every time. I think we have maybe the best opening credits of all Star Trek shows.
We do.
I'm just going to say it.
I'm going to go with that too.
I love the beautiful visuals of our opening sequence. So then we go into Astrometrics Lab, actually, where Janeway's talking on a view screen to an older admiral. This is Hendricks. This is the British actor that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, his first line, I couldn't understand because of his accent. I was like, wait, what? I had to go back a couple of times because he said the Voth, the Kabali, the Vaudoir.
Well, the way he said everything was like very stylized. It's like the Vaudoir. He's like, the Vaudoir. I'm like, Vaudoir. I'm like,
I was like, wait a minute. What is he saying?
What is he saying? Yeah.
But I was very impressed with his fancy pantsness.
He was
very elegant.
And he's one of Janeway's professors from the Academy, right? So there you go.
Yeah. It was very cool. But because she says a little farther than I expected, professor. So they have a history.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we cut to from there, we go to the briefing room. He says, we got a mission for you. We go to the briefing room. We have this cool shot.
Yes.
Where it's like a crane shot where the camera starts big and wide in the briefing room.
Yeah.
And as we're listening to this recording of the probe, mm-hmm. we, the people of Earth, greet you in the spirit of peace mm-hmm. and humility.
Mm-hmm.
The camera's pushing in slowly, seeing all of us just listening. And then it eventually comes down on Janeway pushing a button.
To stop the end of the recording.
To stop the end of the recording.
It's a very cool opening shot. We've never shot from above the briefing room table ever before.
No.
This ever. No.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
Mm. So that was cool. And then I did make a note in the scene. We're basically talking about this probe that was sent out just 4 years after Zefram Cochrane mm-hmm. tested his first warp engine, that it's packed with all kinds of information, Harry says.
And Starfleet has sent us some search grids for us to check out, right? That jumps us into the bridge. Mm-hmm. And we start off basically knowing that we have searched all of grid 295, nothing. Harry says he stayed up all night and he looks it, by the way. I'm going to say the bags underneath my eyes there that either makeup or I intentionally did myself made it look like I was up all night. But he spent all night extrapolating the probe's trajectory. And he suggests to move to 310, grid 310. Let's just move ahead. Skip 296 up to 309 because of all this all night work that he's done.
He basically was an overachiever. Harry was an overachiever. Hey. Tuvok's in the captain's chair listening to Harry's pitch. And Tuvok's like, okay, well, let's try it. Alter course. And then Paris
says, agrees. Were you a little shocked that he agreed personally?
I was a little shocked.
What? Yes, I was.
Yes. Okay. I like Paris's line, trying to impress the Starfleet brass, Harry.
Yeah, that's a good line. Not the best line of the episode, but I think there's a really good one coming up. Okay. Exterior ship shot. Next, back on the bridge, Harry does find it. He finds the titanium or tritanium signature of the hull or whatever, and realizes mm-hmm. that he was on the money. And then I think Tom says something about that too. Like, good job, Harry. You know, he's happy about it.
At this point, I made a note. I said, whatever bad stuff happens now is Harry's fault. Because we wouldn't have been here if you hadn't been an overachiever, staying up all night, we would have been off on some other track. Well, look,
okay, to be Yes.
Harry's fault.
Harry expedited it. But even if Harry didn't say jump to 310, we still would have gotten to 310 eventually. So I'm going to say it's Starfleet's fault in ultimately.
Okay.
I'm going to blame it on them.
I'm going to blame it on Harry because
that's fine. You can throw Harry under the bus. I'm fine with that. moving on, we have this wonderful exterior shot of Voyager in orbit of the planet. Mm-hmm. Did you like the planet the way it looks?
Yeah.
Kind of dead looking, kind of grayish, sort of purplish, ashy looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to astrometrics. We have Janeway, Chakotay, and Seven. Seven has detected the probe, but antimatter radiation has interfered with our sensors, so we don't have the exact location. Mm-hmm. Janeway orders Chakotay to assemble an away team to investigate in the Delta Flyer. So,
well, they look for life signs too. So it's radiation everywhere, high levels of antimatter radiation.
And there's no life signs. No, nothing.
Zero life signs. So they've got they think they've got this probe, but there's nobody there. That they think
on the planet.
Yeah, we go to sick bay. Carrie's there getting inoculations with Tom, and I wrote down Carrie. We haven't seen him in a long time.
We have not seen him in a very long time,
which always makes me nervous for those actors characters when they show up out of nowhere on an away mission. It's not going to end well.
But it's not just Lieutenant Carrie. It's Neelix too. Chakotay there as well. What's interesting is Harry's not there to get inoculated, but yet he is on the away team later. So it's a little strange. I don't know why.
They must not care as much about Harry.
Clearly not. Torres arrived. Like, they didn't give Harry expendable. The memo. He's expendable. Exactly. He's a new gold is the new red, right? Torres arrives for her inoculation. Paris is just beside himself. He's like, let's walk out here and talk. He challenges her. He challenges her decision to be part of this away team because she's pregnant. It's radiation filled down there. And she finally relents and agrees with her hubby or her man, Tom. In the end, my nomination for best line of the episode is "My money's on Belana" from Chakotay.
My winner best line is when Tora's outside, when she's talking with Paris.
Yes.
He says, okay, fine, you win. But if we have another baby, you carry it and I'll go on the away mission.
Fine.
And that's Paris a good goes, one. It's a deal.
It's a deal.
So I don't know if Tom won here. He's going to have to carry the baby next time. I don't know if that's winning or we'll see. We'll see.
That's funny. Moving on to the Delta Flyer interior, we have the away team of Neelix, Carrie, Chakotay, and my autocorrect changed it to Charkitay, but clearly that's not his name. Tom and Harry are also on this away team. It's a very bumpy ride down there.
Bumpy, yes.
Neelix is a little queasy. And the music, I don't know if you noticed this, but the music really had a little bit of an homage to Star Wars in a way. It sounded a lot like some Star Wars background type of orchestral music.
I did notice the music in this episode. I've noticed it the last few episodes, actually, that there's been a kind of a tonal shift to a little more like superhero adventure sounds.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. As they get closer, they see evidence of a civilization that used to be there, but it's in ruins now. Harry says that the radiation levels are at 6,000 isorem, so nothing would be alive down there. There's no way. So Chakotay says, hey, Tom, set the flyer down. Let's get down there. So we do have a planet surface, a CGI shot of the Delta Flyer actually landing. Paris brings a nice little curve in there. Did you like that shot? Are you okay with that one?
I liked it. When the flyer approaches to land, they sort of cut away and there's a lot of snow. So it's snowing.
Yeah.
There's, I guess it's a snowstorm.
Yes.
And I did notice that when the flyer lands, snow doesn't kick up off the ground. Like when a helicopter lands, it kicks up dirt and stuff like that.
It didn't do that in this one.
I did make a note here. I was like, organic material like that in CG back in the 90s, back when we did this, that's really tricky now with our technology to make really good looking organic, whether it's water, mud, snow.
Yes.
So back then they just kind of skipped it.
They sure did.
Yeah. They were like, that's not going to kick up any dust because that's going to be expensive. So they just cut away, but it's the approach was cool. It kind of did a little slide in.
Not bad. As we're seeing the Delta Flyer landing, in the process of landing, we also kind of jump over to a shot of a close-up of a hooded figure that's watching.
Speaking of Star Wars, though, to me, this felt
like that was a very Star Wars-like character. Yes.
Those hazmat suits felt very Star Warsy, like Sith or something.
Yeah, Sith, and also kind of elements of Dune as well, I felt. So, other sci-fi shows kind of came into play there. As we see the close-up of the hooded figure watching, then now we see his POV through, I'm guessing, his visor, his binoculars, alien tech, whatever it is. So we see a little bit of, readout information on the Delta Flyer as it lands. And then finally, back to a close-up of this alien watching and out to commercial after that. Yep. Planet Surface. Love Planet Surface. Vahar, the first shot. Your boots.
Yes, stepping into the ice and
great shot.
Crunching through that. Great shot. It was really good.
Yep. Nice little reveal that this boot belongs to Tom Paris. Mm-hmm. Conversation between Paris, and everyone's in an EV suit at this point, of course. Yep. Tom and Joe. Isn't that funny? Tom and Joe have a conversation about fatherhood, husband and wife interactions. But again, I know what's happening. It's making you feel for Carrie right now. You're like, oh, Carrie's a good guy. He had to deal with the same stuff with his wife that Tom's dealing with his wife. So you're getting these feelings of like, gosh, darn it, we love Carrie. And Neelix is following.
Tom sees something on the ground. He goes to pick it up. Neelix says, be careful.
Yeah.
And Tom picks it up. And
why are you pushing random buttons, Tom? You are the boldest. It looks like a grenade. Like it doesn't look like a toy. And you are so bold.
This reminded me of when I was an actual kid in real life. And my mother would always, we go to the store and she'd be like, just don't touch anything. Just keep your hands to yourself. Don't touch. And I would touch things and everything. I would break them, kind of like the props on this show.
Yes.
They stopped giving me props because I'd always break them. And my mother used to always say that, like, don't touch everything. You don't have to touch it. So I guess Tom is just a little like me.
Did you have flashbacks to your childhood when you watched this scene? I knew you did. There you go. Yes. And of course, he touches the button on what looks to me like a grenade.
Like a grenade. Like,
it looks like some type of bomb. Yeah. And even Neelix tries to stop you. But in this episode, clearly it's an alien music box / toy playing Vivaldi of all things. So now we're thinking, okay. So maybe the probe did have some influence on these people, on this race of aliens here. Carrie detects something on his tricorder and it's off. We go to another direction for the trio. We now cut to Chakotay and Kim, also in EV suits, also exploring another part of this planet. Yep. Harry detects an antimatter signature ahead. And now we have a cool shot of Chakotay and Harry coming in to what looks like an entire football field of missile silos is what it looks like.
Yes, these giant bunkers with circle doors on the top. Do you remember where you shot this scene?
16, I'm pretty sure.
Near the cave set?
Yeah,
it must have been right on the edge of that big cave set.
Yeah, because they only built one silo, right? All the other ones are CGI. So that one silo that we step on a little bit later, and if it wasn't there, it had to have been there. They couldn't have, could they have squeezed that on the side of stage 9? Maybe?
No, I think it had to have been there.
Yeah. Anyway,
it was very cool though.
Cool shot though. I like it. Yeah. Yep. Paris hails Chakotay that they think the probe is in a cave. Chakotay says, just keep him posted. And then we cut back to Chakotay and Harry walking onto one of the missile silos. Super cool. And then we get that shot where we can see in basically because we've got flashlights and we actually see the warhead that's still active in there. It's kind of crazy with alien symbols on there.
Yeah, that was very cool. We go to the cave set next. We're inside the caves. Neelix, Carrie, Paris are walking in. Mm-hmm. They start to see some equipment, like dusty old equipment. They think it's some kind of control room or a laboratory, diagnostic equipment everywhere. There was tons of it.
You remember this?
There was a lot of it.
This was on 16 too, I'm guessing? Yes.
Okay. They basically used our cave set where we did all of our planet stuff.
Everything.
Yeah. And they just sort of redressed it with some of this, this lab equipment and stuff. But there was a ton of it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking through all this stuff. Harry does say most of the stuff is still functional. They've been working on something.
Yeah.
And then he finds a piece of painted metal that's from the Friendship probe or whatever. Harry sees it.
But why is it covered with that much dust?
I know.
This is their this is their workplace, right? Yeah. This is where they've been living. Why would it be covered? Oh, gosh. Okay. Anyway,
it feels like a ruse. It feels like they've tried to trap them to make it feel abandoned, but it's not. But
oh, that,
it
maybe that's like a what lot it was.
Of,
yeah.
Seems like a lot of work to do this. Paris, at the end of the scene, when they find all this lab equipment, basically says, hey, let's set up these transport enhancers. We're going to send all this, you know, transport all this stuff.
Transport it back, yeah.
And calls Chakotay. And again, I would just made another note. Where you and Chakotay are is very, it's a very cool VisFX.
Oh, yeah.
Extension of our cave set, because there's not much room to work with there. There's not a lot of cave on the edge of that set.
Nope.
And they did a really good job with the VisFX and whatever set they built. It, it looks super cool. But Paris says we found some of this, you know, piece of the probe, and we're going to get ready to beam it back to the flyer. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay says, great, we'll meet you there. We'll meet you at the flyer.
Yeah.
And suddenly they hear a noise back in the cave, inside the cave where Paris and Neelix are.
Yeah.
And they look around, and hazmat suits start popping out from above them and all around them. And I did make a note, like the hazmat suits are almost like dirt colored. And it was a great choice to sort of blend in.
Make
to
them
the
layout. They're camouflaged.
Very basically. Camouflaged. Mm-hmm. It looked cool.
Mm-hmm. And then Carrie tried
they look
to,
hot to me. Like they I bet all those actors were really hot.
Yeah, but his tricorder didn't read any life signs initially, and never did because they weren't looking for the type of life signs that we know, which would be life signs that are not totally soaked in radiation. Yes. And that's the reason why we couldn't see them, or Carrie couldn't detect them because of that. But anyway, we are now back in the Delta Flyer. And Chakotay and Kim,
Harry and Chakotay walk in. Chakotay first notices a beeping sound, and there's an open panel. Somebody's been in there.
Yeah, shuttle. someone's a robber.
They've had a burglar.
Yeah.
And then we cut in the back, and there's Harry's putting his helmet away.
Yeah, inside. Harry's hair looks so good even after the helmet is taken off. It's unbelievable.
Really good. He's kind of jumped. He's hit with a box as he puts his helmet away.
Well, you know, you saw what he did first. He takes the gate, and if you look at the gate, it doesn't look like that heavy of a gate. Okay,
no. And it looks kind of like. By the way, it hits
my EV solid. Suit. Yeah, so
which is
a
football.
Thank you.
Outfit.
So that really is not going to do anything. That will probably shock me. But what probably did something to me was him taking that container and then bonking me on the head with it, basically, right? So that's what gets me all woozy, I suppose.
It was a good hit.
It was, but my note was Harry looks stupid. He looks silly. I thought he looked silly. In that.
You just got surprised. I bought it, and I thought you sold
okay
this stunt very well.
Okay,
you
good.
Did this,
good.
Right? You didn't have
did.
A double for this.
No,
yeah.
No.
No, that looked like you.
Yeah.
Good job on the stunt.
Thank you.
But yeah, the alien starts to raise his weapon. Chakotay comes in and
stuns him.
Chakotay shoots him.
Yeah.
Goes over to Harry, lifts him up, and calls the away team, and nothing. And then there's a big bump or something.
Well, we're getting hit now. We're being fired upon, right? Because we're now in the cockpit. And
well, when we go back to the cockpit, I just have to say there's all these stripes on
the
windshield.
Streaks. Yes.
It looks like giant bird poop streaks.
It sure does.
Like,
and
they
have
giant birds that just pooped while we were flying, and poop streaks.
I must interject right now. Okay. Yes. I have a shot from publicity that was taken that I printed up to take to conventions of me sitting in the shuttle in the Delta Flyer wearing the EV suit.
The EV suit.
And with the window with the streaks on it. And I never knew which episode that was from. I was like,
this is it.
I thought it was from the underwater episode that we did a while back. Right.
Yeah. It almost looks like underwater. Giant like seaweed kelp.
Right. So, but it's or something. Yes. So I thought, oh my gosh, it's from that episode. But no, it was from this episode. And now, because you described it as bird poo poo, maybe that's why that's the least popular photo that I printed up.
It
people
looks
are
like giant bird poop streaks.
It does.
Yeah. Skid marks. Skid marks from birds.
It does. But we're getting hit by these antimatter weapons, and our shields are failing, and Chakotay is like,
let's get out of here.
Later.
We can't help him if we're all dead.
Yep.
And I wrote, you're leaving us?
Chakotay. Hey, Harry does protest. He's like, what about the others?
Thank
but
you.
Look, you know, but we do need to have us being alive to help you. So yeah. We had to go, man. We had to go. I'm sorry. Back to the cave.
Carrie's trying to talk to them, but he takes a nasty hit to the head.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And Tom stands up to protect him.
Yeah. When he hit you, on the EV suit. So I felt like it reminded, I had a flashback.
And I acted like it hurt.
Yes.
I was so like, ow. I can't feel a thing.
Can I just say this? My flashback when I watched you reacting was, as a kid, getting punished and pretending it hurt, you know, the spanking. Yes. Pretending the spanking hurt to stop it sooner, basically. So yes. I felt like you were doing the exact same thing to the, you're like, to the aliens to make them not hit you again.
Yeah. Don't hit me on that hard
shell.
Don't
hit me on the really hard protective part. Ow. Kind of. But I had a flashback myself. Okay. Yeah. So after the beatdown happens, Varen is the one that kind of comes to see this.
He
is
reveals
what's horrible.
Himself. Yeah.
But his line is, leave them alone. So you immediately think, okay, this guy's taking sympathy for Carrie, for Tom, for everyone else that's, you know, being beat down. So, and that's the mind mess. That's what messes with your mind in this episode because you start thinking this guy's a sympathetic character, and then later, what he does, you're like,
funny, and I'm gonna just editorialize for one brief.
Sure, minute. Go.
I liked the story, I love the direction.
Yeah,
I do feel like, as a broad statement, that the guest cast is just a little milquetoast to me, just a little in the middle. Like, when you start talking about Varen, seems like a good guy, but then he's a bad guy. Like, I think we needed much stronger.
Choices.
Differentiated personalities of like, Varen needs to be the scary, badass. Like, he needs to be, from the jump, he needs to be tough and scary and intense. And I just didn't.
Okay. I was so, this Varen was here. You feel, and I agree with you, that the Varen, whoever plays Varen, could have been here, right? I mean, in terms of
he
the
ends
commitment.
Up being a murderer.
And a little,
he kills.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, people. But he kills one of our people in cold blood.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a good person.
No.
He's a desperate.
No.
You know, vengeful,
somehow,
angry.
Yeah. But taking the middle of the road sort of tactic also worked in that you did not expect him to kill Carrie, though. You see what I'm saying? Is it sort of like, he's kind of milquetoast. He's not really going to do anything.
I felt like they all sort of blended, even the pregnant alien lady, even the guy on the ship.
Okay.
Like, they were all sort of
so
low energy.
Let's have more layers. Let's have more layers for these aliens, right? Let's not keep them one note.
They all felt like they were sort of playing the same kind of character.
Right.
And so I didn't know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it was very low energy and sort of soft. And anyway, that was my that's my biggest complaint in this episode. I think the performances should have been have as much variety as I think the story had written into it, because it's got a lot of potential in it. But I feel like it was a little unrealized.
OK. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that opinion.
That's my little sidebar.
Yeah. But after the beatdown, Varen realizes that we're there to collect our probe, which is basically the beginning of the end of their civilization. So they're very upset that it's now. Not only are they upset, they're somewhat, Varen's somewhat kind of happy, I think, because he realizes, now the perpetrators have returned. Now we can hold them accountable. So there's a little bit of that going on.
And Tom is very confused.
He has no clue what's coming. No. Huh?
And by the way, I do want another quick sidebar.
Yeah.
When in our intro, when we're trying to remember this episode.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I don't remember more of this, because I had a
lot. You're in a lot of it. Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a Tom Paris story.
No, but you're in your screen time is.
Yeah,
it's up there big time.
And once I
big time,
once I watched this, there are things that came back to me.
Yeah,
like in
this is
the baby thing, the delivery.
This is
thing.
A great Tom character development episode. Huge,
I think the last couple episodes have been huge.
Oh my gosh, I mean, you are the stand up guy in this one, that is for sure.
Okay, so the next scene, we're in a hallway, Chakotay and Janeway are walking. Did you notice in the scene they're talking about the aliens and the antimatter weapons?
Yeah.
And Kate says antimatter, And Chakotay says antimatter. And they both say it differently. And I'm like, how do you, is it antimatter?
Antimatter.
Yeah. It's like, they said antimatter.
I'm sorry.
In the one scene.
I did not nitpick this scene as much as you did. My goodness. You noticed the way they pronounced the antimatter. Okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. I don't know why, because they said it, because Chakotay says, whoever they are, they have antimatter weapons.
Right.
She goes, antimatter? And I was like, he just said antimatter. Okay. He just said it. They have antimatter weapons.
Right.
Antimatter? No, antimatter.
I got to go back and watch that again. Yeah, dadgummit. All right. They get hailed by Tuvok, who's on the bridge. And yes. Tuvok says, hey, we're being hailed from the surface. Janeway thinks it's the away team. Tuvok says, no. So then we cut to the bridge. And this is Janeway basically talking with Varen. And it's audio, though. There's no video. I think it's just audio at this point. And he's talking about how his name is Varen and the crewmen are... Everyone else is his prisoner, that the away team basically is his prisoner.
Yeah, he's got hostages and it's just audio at this point. I did find it interesting because when we were down on the planet, it was a lot of handheld in the cave set when Varen is walking around. I wasn't really clear what he was talking into since there's no bridge set in the cave.
That's right.
But I did like the movement. I liked that he was actively, as if he was on speakerphone, I guess, or something. He was just kind of walking around talking to Janeway in the cave somewhere.
That's my missing scene. Him turning to someone and go, hey, hit speakerphone now, like that. Yeah. And they do it for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically he accuses Janeway and all of us for committing genocide, which is a huge accusation to have. Janeway's just confused. She doesn't know what's happening. But he keeps explaining that we are going to pay for what happened to his people. And again, she's clueless. And so she cuts to the chase. What do you want?
What do you want me to do? And he says, I want you to get us, all of us, off this planet. Find us a new home that's not radiation soaked.
Right.
And Janeway says, okay, we'll let my crewman go and we'll talk about it. And he says, no, we're not talking.
Yeah,
your people are not safe until my people are.
Right.
And basically threatening, it's a hostage situation. And he says, you've got 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The clock starts now.
Right.
And that's our act out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so we come back from the commercial break. We see Janeway and Tuvok talking. She wants to scan for the nearest M-class planet. He said, you need to, you know, rescue us and get us someplace safe. So she's going to start looking. And Tuvok's like, you're going to meet his demands? You're going to let him blackmail you? And she says, I'm just keeping my options open. Calls Chakotay, you're with me. We cut to sick bay. Now we see that this alien who was the burglar on the flyer that Chakotay stunned.
He's under the clamshell bed right now. He's unconscious, I think. Yeah.
And the doctor says he looked at his garment. It's magnesite, which is kind of like an environmental suit, but it doesn't offer full protection. That the doctor says his skin, his body is saturated with this radiation. That's why no one could detect his life signs.
That's right.
It's almost like his tissues are indistinguishable from the radioactive atmosphere.
That's and I right. Just thought,
that's gross.
That's horrible. It's just so deep into their skin. You can't even tell. It's pretty bad. Yeah. Well, Janeway wants to wake him up, and mm-hmm. the doctor does wake him up with the hypo spray. And now what ensues is just this conversation of just pretty much, this is what you did to our people. I do not believe that you're trying to help us. I do not believe that you're trying to be nice to us. I believe that you're here to harm us. And his whole theory is that that we sent the probe there to give them technology to cause themselves to obliterate their own, to basically pollute their own planet, yeah. right? To mess everything up so that we come in to conquer them. And then Janeway makes a very, very, very key statement, which is, why would we contaminate a planet that we're trying to conquer? That makes mm-hmm. no sense. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And he's still like, no, I don't believe this is that you guys are, you know, on the up and up. I think this
But can you blame him a bit?
No, like, he can't. Guess what he does?
He's
spouting Varin. Right. Like he's mm-hmm. just Varin is their leader. So everything coming out of Otrin's mouth is basically Varin from what I hear. But Janeway is very calm. Janeway is just saying, like, look, you know, this probe was sent 300 years ago. Like we weren't even alive when this probe was sent. Everything that he has to say, she has something to sort of balance that out and sort of show him the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No, it's a nice beginning to changing his understanding of what happened.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a nice scene.
Right. We jump to the cave.
Jump in the cave. Now Paris and Neelix and Carrie don't have their environmental suits anymore. They're just in their uniforms. Carrie's
what is that? Is that what you wear under the environmental suit? Because I never got that uniform ever. I've never worn that. So I guess that's what you had underneath, clearly.
I guess so. Yeah. But Paris says, I think I need my med kit. He's really hurt. And we begin to meet Brynn. She says, I can't give you your stuff, but she hands him a metal bowl and some cloth. And Paris starts cleaning this cut on his head. And I noticed as I was watching the scene when Paris is talking to this woman, that I was wiping on either side of the makeup cut. Because when you touch it,
you're going to mess it up.
You're going to mess up the makeup. So if it were a real cut, I would be like, you know, dabbing it and really cleaning it, but a makeup cut, you have to sort of pretend like you're touching it.
Yeah.
So for the next take, it's not ruined. I could do is watch my fake cleaning without touching the actual cut.
Okay, there's a joke amongst Star Wars fans that stormtroopers are so bad at aiming that they can never hit their target. Yeah. You as a medic are so bad at aiming, at dabbing, you can't even find the wound. But we now know why. It's because if you touched it, makeup would be on your butt about messing up the actual wound.
Mm-hmm.
So funny. Okay.
But Paris and Brynn start talking. They talk about, he says, when's your baby due? She's obviously pregnant. He says, mm-hmm. B'Elanna's pregnant too. We're expecting a girl. And she's like, how do you know?
Yeah.
And he makes a joke about she has my eyes and her mother's cranial ridges.
Yeah.
And then he asks, is this your first baby? And she goes, no. And he goes, oh, boys, girls. She says, two boys and a girl. Mm-hmm. And Paris says, what's their names? And she goes, they were all stillborn.
Hmm.
Oh,
very sad.
Sad.
You were, and I could see your reaction was genuine because you at that point already had kids and you understand what it is.
Yeah.
If one of your kids was stillborn, you would be devastated. Mm-hmm. So you did a very effective look. It was a sad look, and it was an empathetic look as well. So good job.
I do remember shooting this scene.
Okay.
And my memory is that this actress, Barry, I think was her name.
Yeah, Barry Hockwald, who played Brynn.
Barry Hockwald. I remember she felt a bit method actressy to me.
Oh.
And as I watched the scene, meaning, and what I mean by that is that she was always a bit standoffish with me and a little in character and a little like,
Even suspicious. When the camera wasn't rolling.
When the camera wasn't rolling, I felt a bit like I couldn't quite, you know, just have an easygoing conversation with this guest actor.
I hear
you,
man.
It was a bit method. It was always a bit distant. I don't know. That memory sort of came back as I watched this scene. Because as soon as I saw this scene, I'm like, oh yeah, there was a whole storyline and it started coming back to me.
Yeah.
And I don't remember feeling like I ever connected with her, you know, when we were shooting it. I did remember Lieutenant Carey. Gosh. Mm. Knew that he was going to, you know, he'd read the script. He knows he's going to die. And he was not happy. We leave the cave scene and all of my memories of that. We go to the Astrometrics lab. And there's Tuvok, Tora's, Janeway, Harry's there.
Yeah.
They're talking about how long it would take to take all of these people
to the nearest M-class planet, which would really, it's okay. Let's talk about
there's
this.
There's 5,500.
Right. There's 5,500 people, but it's 132 light years away. Round trip, according to Torres, is 2 months. So now to shuttle all 5,500 people, the extrapolated time frame is now 3 years that we have to tack onto our journey back to the Alpha Quadrant. We have to first ferry these people for 3 years. So Janeway's like, no, I mean, that's crazy. Tuvok's like, well, we can use force. And Janeway's like, not until we've exhausted every other option. Yeah.
And B'Elanna, by the way, she does say, hey, what about Tom?
What about
and the
Tom?
Others?
Yeah, what are they going to do this whole time in 3 years while we're
she doesn't them? Say what about Tom. She goes, what about Tom and the others? And I was like, or just Tom, maybe? What about B'Elanna? Do you just say, what about Tom and stop there? I mean,
well,
yeah,
the
there's
fact
others.
That she listed your name and no one else's means you're the special.
Okay.
One, so you're
I was
okay.
Just like, why not just leave it at Tom? Just Tom?
Yeah.
How's
what
Tom?
About Tom? Yeah. What about
yeah,
my
that
husband?
Would have been a little more emotional rather than Tom and the others, all my other favorite people, you know.
Oh, anyway. My gosh. We're now in sick bay.
We're in sick bay.
Seven of nine walks in. Yes. O2
I got to say about
her
walking in.
Okay,
if
go.
You freeze frame this.
Yeah.
When the door opens, she's just standing there in the hall.
No.
And you know what the rule was. We always were supposed to be on the move as the door opened.
No.
So when you see the doctor's doing a little business, he moves back to a table to type something in, and then the door opens. She's literally just standing there. And then starts to move. So I was like, Jerry, you're supposed to take a couple steps back and be moving.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to go other side of the coin. I'm going to say, you do remember there were times that certain scenes would take a take after take after take because something wasn't right in terms of how the camera is going to land and bringing that first actor in or whatever. So maybe this was take 8 and it was just like, oh, let's get it over already. Maybe, you know, I'm just feeling
maybe.
Like, how could she not know that? I feel, or how could the director not have seen that? And maybe it was the correct way. She walked around the corner and it opened right where she got up to the door. And then this was maybe a later take that they
just happened
it.
To pick a take where she was definitely just standing still,
there,
the door open, and then she walked in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so she walks in, Otra notices her, and Seven is there because she's the first thing we hear her saying is, I've extracted the nanoprobes, and the doctor says, I'll begin reprogramming them. Now, this catches Otra's attention. So he's like, nanoprobes. So she's like, these are small machines. They're going to help us repair your tissue, this damaged tissue of yours. And he's like, wait, extracted from where? She's like, oh, my bloodstream. So now he's even more like, what? Like, is everyone like this on your ship? Like, now he's thinking like, this is a ship full of people that have microscopic machines in their bloodstream. But she says, no, just me. I'm the only one that has this. And this is still something that's shocking to him that anything can repair his skin though. Right. So he's like,
but then just as he's getting excited about that, Janeway walks in and she's on a mission a bit. She is. You've told me you've been looking for ways to neutralize this radiation. He goes, yes, all my life. She goes, tell me about your work.
She comes in kind of mad though. It was interesting. It was like a little, she's got some attitude right here. And Carrie's not dead yet.
I feel
yet,
like she's on a mission. Yeah, I think she's like the clock is ticking and she's trying to, she's fishing.
Okay.
But she's trying to find out something that will give her away in here.
Right.
But we don't have to take 3 years of shuttling people back and forth.
And so she comes to ask Otra because he's the scientist and she wants to know about his work. Right. So that's pretty much it.
We go inside the cave. Lieutenant Carrie wakes up.
Oh, no. It's this scene. This is it.
Yeah.
It's he's got a stomach ache because the inoculations are wearing off.
Mm-hmm.
Neelix talks about the caves are naturally shielded, but you know, environmental suit is the way to go, and they don't have them on.
And then
when Yun comes in, right?
Yeah, little girl peeks around a rock.
Yeah.
And she says, hello. And Tom's delivery of hello was so high. I was like,
It was the
did
highest.
I say I've that? Hello. Hello.
Yeah, you were Mickey Mousing it right there. I was very impressed with your octave that you were able to hit. I was like, my goodness.
Thank you. Yes, but I do start talking to the little girl.
Yeah.
Trying to make her comfortable. And then Paris gets the idea to give her the little music box thing and ask Neelix, where's the thing?
I wrote down, Paris is a very demanding hostage. Yes. You're like, excuse me, we'd like to give her something.
Yeah. Give me the bag over there. Give me my bag. There.
Yeah.
He could be asking for a weapon.
That's what's so funny.
Varen says that. He goes, that there could be a weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to give her the music box. And yeah, Varen says, you know, these guys are dangerous.
Yeah. Well, he snatches it away from her. She does play with it for a second. And then Varen's running over like, this could be a weapon. So he flips out, right? Rin is like, look, it's harmless. So now you see a little bit of dissenting opinion from Varen, a little bit from Rin.
Mm-hmm.
The seeds of rebellion are happening.
I do remember this scene with the little girl. She was really young.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I do remember, because she had to get all her makeup on, that took time, mm-hmm. and then she had to get it off, and she only had a short day. I do remember this scene being a bit of a crunch scene. Like, oh, we got to go fast because the kid's on a clock. You know, there's limited hours that you can film with very young children.
I think this actress was born in 1990. So we're filming this in
10 years old?
Yeah, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Varen still doesn't trust them.
Well, that's when Neelix jumps up and he's like, look, let me go talk to him. And Neelix, Paris is like, what? Why? Because I'm the ambassador, Voyager's ambassador, remember? And I think Neelix did a really good job trying to convince him. I mean, he really laid it out. And he also sort of brought in his own experience about Talax and how his family was all killed by the Metreon Cascade, hundreds of thousands of people. But, you know, Varen's so bitter and so he's so myopic. He only sees one thing. And that's it. He can't see anything else. And he says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about what happened to your family. And I did like that actor's delivery of that line. It seems sincere. But then he goes, but don't compare your life to mine. That's his final line in that.
Yeah.
Dismisses.
Nice try, Neelix. Neelix did a really good job. Mm-hmm. We go to the bridge next. Janeway is talking to Varen now, trying to propose this alternative.
Yeah.
There may be a way to counteract the radiation, but Varen is like, you know, Otrin told you this. Otrin has too many ideas. Like he doesn't think that Otrin's a very smart guy.
Or maybe he's too smart for him, right? Mm-hmm. One of the two. So,
but Varen, you know, she's trying to, you know, come up with a different plan. And Varen is like, this is not a negotiation.
Because his feeling is this. Varen says, if I release the hostages, what is going to prevent you from just leaving or attacking us? And Janeway's like, okay, all right. You know, I know you suffered, you know, so let's just take this in baby steps. Let us have just one hostage. And then we'll give you food, medicine, whatever you need. And so Varen, you know, there's actually kind of it's not a close up, but you do see a shot of Varen's face sort of like thinking about it. Yeah. Running this through his head, thinking about what he's going to do. And then he says, what's your name? And it's Carrie that he's kind of pointing at. He tells Carrie to set up the transport enhancers. You know, it sounds like he's going to get, you know, one hostage is going to get to go home. It's going to be Lieutenant Carrie. Awesome. Mm-hmm. But the music kind of gave it away. The orchestral music right there started getting very foreboding at that point when he was setting up the transporters. And I was thinking, oh, no. And he says, I'm sorry, Mr. Carey. Sorry. Yeah. Your crewman's ready, Captain. And Janeway goes, transport and signal. You hear a little bit of a phaser fire or something like that. And
on the bridge, you hear Paris yell, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? And, what the hell?
Janeway calls for Tom, but no answer. And then the doctor calls the bridge. And we cut to the doctor informing the captain that they killed Lieutenant Carey. And he's lying there on the floor.
With a hole through his heart.
Oh.
So sad.
Very sad.
I was shocked.
And Josh was not happy about it.
No.
But there's the act out. He's dead on the floor. We go to the bridge and Janeway is pissed off.
Oh, she's mad.
He says, you murdered one of my crewmen, and it's not going to make me more receptive to your demands if you start killing my crewmen.
Yeah. Varen plays chicken where he's like, well, don't force me to kill anyone else. And Janeway's like, fine, I'll evacuate your people. Mm-hmm. But our transporters aren't designed to accommodate large groups, so we'll need time to modify them. Varen gives her 1 hour, and she's like, okay. And that's when she gives that look to Chakotay. My ready room. She's so mad right now. It's great. I love it. So she goes off to formulate some type of plan we don't know about at this point.
We don't know what's going to happen.
No.
We cut to the cave. There's Bryn bringing Paris and Neelix, who are starting to kind of feel the effects of this radiation.
Yeah. She brings you guys a bowl of leaves is what it is.
Bowl of leaves.
Enjoy these leaves, please. Yeah.
And she says, this will make you feel better. And Neelix thanks her. And Paris is like, why are you helping us? And she says, because your child is going to need a father, isn't she?
Yeah.
So
you've got an ally.
There's a little bonding going on there. Yeah. We cut to sickbay. And for the first time we see Otrin, he's kind of half his face.
It's clear.
Clear.
There's no lesions.
Yeah. The doctor says that's partially working. Seven explains that the nanoprobes are repairing
And even his conversation, because before he was sort of breathy, like out of breath. The actor was playing it that way. And then in this scene, he says, he can breathe easier.
And he gets up and he walks across the room.
He's fine. Yeah. He's pretty darn good.
Otrin and Seven, continue talking about debating, basically, about Seven saying Varen is very irrational. And Otrin's trying to explain that you have
look what he's gone through. Look what we've all gone through.
Yeah.
Yes. Look, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Otrin even says, you can't deny that your people sent this. And Seven says, yes, they made an error in judgment.
Right.
They didn't fully anticipate the consequences of their actions, but they did not mean to hurt you or destroy your world. And, humans can evolve and learn from their mistakes. And so can you, which is a great lesson
But then Otrin responds with, well, even if I believed you, Varen never would. Mm-hmm. And that's when Seven puts the seeds of rebellion in his mind. He goes, well, then maybe your people need a change in leadership. And Otrin's like, no, I'm not a leader. And Seven says, well, you're a scientist, someone who can see a problem and come up with a solution. And the same thing can apply to a leader. And we leave that scene with this very pensive look on Otrin's face. He feels like, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
Back in the cave.
Back in the cave. We see two kids eating. They're sitting on the ground, I think, eating the,
probably leaves again.
Leaves.
So, yes.
Which is, where do the leaves grow, by the way? I was looking at some of their clothes and their food, and I'm like,
it's
nothing.
Yeah, it's been nuked. I mean, it's just, there's nothing left. There's nothing left.
How did they make fabric for their fancy vests and pants?
If they're growing leaves, it has to be within the cave in some type of hydroponic sort of enclosure. There's that. How can you grow a plant in that type of environment? Impossible.
Yes. Yeah. They eat a plant-based diet, so they're very healthy.
Yeah.
Vegetarians. Yes, but Paris is watching the kids eat when suddenly a woman says, Bryn's going into labor.
Mm-hmm.
It's the baby. Yeah. She says it's too soon.
But she says, let him help me. Uh-huh. And Varen kind of lightens up a little bit. He's like, can you? And Paris is like, yeah, I think so. But I need my med kit.
We see the Delta Flyer flying in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great CGI, kind of a high shot.
Yeah,
of the set.
Yeah, so a sentry post sees that happening, and he tells another guard, "Hey, go tell Varen what happened."
Mm-hmm. Back in the cave, this is the delivery scene. Emergency delivery. Paris says, "I'm losing, the heartbeat of the baby."
Yeah,
and he decides to speed up the contractions, get this baby out so he can deal with the baby. But suddenly, a guard comes in. I think this was James Taylor.
I think that this guard, the one that goes,
ships returned.
Their ships returned.
That I think was that James was ja- Taylor. I know James Taylor was in this episode.
Fine. Wouldn't it be funny if James Taylor was like, I'm going to give him a fake name. I'm going to be an extra on this show or under five on this show.
I wish I had known he was on the show. I would have had him sing a song or two. I love James Taylor. But Varen says, okay, their ship's back, double the guards at the entrance.
Yeah, send out patrols.
We go outside. And Chakotay's kind of signaling our people to move around, I guess.
Yeah.
We cut back in the cave, the baby's being delivered.
But when he does that thing, before he does that thing, they actually stun one of the patrol members, right? So that's that's how they get the uniform, right? He falls back, the rest of them scatter. And that's when Chakotay goes, bop, 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 bop. And then it goes right back to the cave, the delivery scene.
And Paris has the baby, but it's not breathing, he says. And we see this baby.
Yeah.
It's a rubber baby.
Talk about this baby when you're working with this baby.
So there was two props.
Yes.
There was never a real baby. We didn't have a live human
Right.
Actor baby.
Yeah.
We had a rubber baby that was the blue one. That was
that's just the dead one.
The dead one, basically.
Yes.
And it was kind of gross. I remember.
It looked,
very realistic. It was, it was heavy to hold.
Really? They put weight to it too?
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. And then after, spoiler alert, Paris saves the baby.
Right.
There's, more color in the skin, not blue anymore.
Animatronic?
And that was an animatronic, so remote controlled puppeted baby.
That's what I thought.
Where the mouth moves and very cool. But right now we got the blue baby. It's a rubber baby. It was gross. Paris needs 3 millijoules from the cardio stimulator, and we cut to the planet surface. Tuvok gets ambushed.
Yeah.
And the guard says, "Don't move. I'll take him to Varen. Tell the others." And the guard says, "This way, move." And I felt like they got him pretty easy here. I was like, I started getting suspicious. I didn't remember what happened, but I was like, Tuvok gave up really easy.
Tuvok is our head of security. Would he be taken that quickly? Probably not.
Yeah, it felt suspicious to me.
But also when that guard said, "I'll take him to Varen and tell the others," it's Bob's voice right there. So that's another giveaway if you're listening carefully.
We go back in the cave. Paris increases to 5 millijoules. Mm-hmm. He hears a heartbeat. We hear a baby cry. And we cut back, and the blue rubber baby is now kind of pink and got color to it.
Yes.
I was like, that was fast. That was a quick change on the baby.
It was. And you basically tell Bryn and hand the little breathing baby back to Bryn saying, "You have a son."
A boy. She had a boy. Guard comes in. One of the patrols took another prisoner. Mm-hmm. Varen says, "Put him with the others." And Tuvok starts to head over.
You mentioned, you say, "We need to get this baby to Voyager." And Varen's like, "Nope. He's staying right here in Radiation Central."
Tuvok and the guard walk over. Suddenly the guard hands him a weapon. They both turn. They stun the other men. They stun Varen. They stun the other guards. And then this guard that gave
actually he doesn't stun Varen. Tuvok Vulcan neck pinches Varen and then shoots another guard that's standing by. So that's what I saw. It was a very fast action scene. But then we reveal the guard is actually the doctor, who is quite happy and with himself. Yeah. And he was able to take out everyone. He aimed well. Good job.
Mm-hmm. And he says, when you need to infiltrate a toxic environment, it helps to be a hologram.
Most
which
definitely.
Is true, because Tuvok needed the environmental suit, but the doctor didn't. So he could go undercover.
That is right. The doctor was the only person for this job.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Tuvok calls Chakotay, says, "We've got the hostages." They prepare to beam out.
Yeah. And so Chakotay and Kim beam out, right? That's what happens. We beam back up the flyer. Okay.
And then Bryn comes over to Paris and says, "Thank you." And Paris is like, "You know, this baby is not going to survive. I promise I'll bring him. Let me take him to the ship. I'll bring him back. I promise." And Bryn agrees. She trusts him, which is a huge win.
That's huge.
Yeah. And Paris steps into the enhancer, inside the enhancers with the baby.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says 5 to beam up.
See, I think Tuvok should have said 4.2 to beam up, because the baby is so tiny. And and then he would have said 0.2, remember, is saturated. Well, and actually not saturated, right? Would the baby still be saturated with radiation?
I don't know. It's been in utero.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Okay.
But they beam out. They beam out. Paris has the baby. He's going to go take care of him.
Yeah.
We come back from the commercial and we're in sick bay.
Yeah.
And the doctor has got the baby looking great.
Janeway's all business, isn't she?
She's all business. God. And I did notice, so they're by the bio bed.
Yeah.
And sitting in the background are Tom and Neelix on the side beds.
Yeah.
And I just thought, why are we sitting posing by ourselves?
Well, you guys just got treated, though. What do you mean?
Yeah, but we should have been laying down or on our elbows. We're both sitting there like we're waiting for our lines. It just was funny. I was like, it almost looked like we were both like in ready position. Okay, is it my line yet? And speak.
So essentially that part of sick bay was the green room. That's where you guys are just sort of
just
like
hanging
chilling
out, waiting for our lines. Yes.
Okay, fine.
Just posing. It felt a little posy to me. Yeah. I don't know.
Janeway's just like, "Look, once this baby is stable, send it back to the surface, transport the baby to the surface, and give him some food, a couple medical supply, cartons and let's get out of here. And that's not settling well with Neelix and Paris, who then
they
follow
her.
You guys chase her.
Not only do we chase her,
Paris
jumps in front of her and cuts her off. I was
like,
I just cut off the captain.
You were so aggressive.
I jumped in front of her.
Yeah. You could have been demoted for that. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Should have been. Mm-hmm. That was rude. But Paris is arguing here. He's saying, you know, that you told them that you might be able to neutralize the radiation. Is that true? And she goes, yes, but they don't want our help and I can't force it on them.
And plus they killed Mr. Carey. And then, but then your argument is like, that was one man. That was one person who killed Carey. If you saw how desperate, you would basically help them. You would not ignore their suffering. Yeah. So I think that was a good plea.
I think he gets to her a bit. We go to engineering. Otrin's in there with Janeway and he's been doing some experiments and demonstrates in this little sparkly red canister.
It's like a big fat test tubey looking canister. Well, basically they're pumping in the antimatter radiation into this chamber, this glass chamber that we're looking at. And Otrin is showing Janeway his theory of how to basically neutralize the radiation. So we see this effect, kind of a sparkling effect that happens that changes the color of this radiation.
It becomes clear. Looks like healthy air. So
it's not smog
polluted,
anymore. Right.
Yeah, polluted air turns clear. So it looks like they've they've got the science to do it. And Janeway says, well, how can we apply these methods to a planetary scale?
Yeah.
And Seven says, well, you know, atmospheric processors are one way.
Yeah. But that would take an army of engineers.
Yeah, we can't do that.
No.
And then Janeway goes, what if we encase the catalytic agent in photon torpedoes? And I went, we don't have any more torpedoes.
The minute she said that, I thought of you. I thought of you immediately. I thought Robbie's watching this going like, she's shaking his head going, really? Not only do we not have photon torpedoes, but you're using our non-torpedoes just to help people change their atmosphere. Yeah. You know, sort of like we're not even using them to defend ourselves.
We're going to need a lot of them because it says multiple detonations at a low altitude. We got to do a lot of torpedoes. Now, some people have said, if we ran out of torpedoes, we could just replicate new torpedoes. Okay, let's say that's true. But if that's true, why did we make such a point in the first pilot episode or whatever, that we only have this many torpedoes?
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna have to, why would we even, it wouldn't matter. You've got unlimited torpedoes.
And we've been, all throughout the show, we've been conserving replicator rations. So it's not like we have rations to go around to make extra torpedoes every week or every day.
We don't have any torpedoes to do, but clearly we do because we send them down.
And, these are the reserve torpedoes. They're off to the side. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
We go back to the cave and Otrin is almost completely done.
Yeah, his face is clear almost, right? He's got a couple of lesions, but that's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. And, Bryn, does he have the baby? Yes. Bryn brings, Otrin brings the baby with him. Yes.
Otrin brings the baby and Bryn is like, he's beautiful.
Yeah.
And Otrin says they can, you know, give us medicine to treat all of us. Mm-hmm. But Varen is still angry. He's like, can they bring back the people who die? Can they rebuild our cities?
Yeah.
We can't trust these people. Mm-hmm. And Bryn finally says, you know, look at my child. They said they were going to help him and they kept their word.
Yes.
And I felt she is the most rational.
Yeah.
And the lesson for me here was like, actions speak louder than words. Like, look at this baby they just saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actions can overcome preconceptions, but just words. Yeah. Don't mean anything until people can see.
I like that.
The baby, the change in this baby. So
yeah.
We go back to the bridge. Tuvok says shield modifications are online. Chakotay asks torpedoes. Seven says ready. I say no, they're not because we don't have any torpedo. But anyway, Seven says they're ready.
Yeah.
And they hail them.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, Otrin, we're ready to begin. And he says, good luck.
Yeah.
And I wondered if all these people were jealous of Otrin, by the way. Like, he got a makeover. He got the full makeover. Now he's come back, like, all cocky. Like,
Yeah, but told him he has passes to the spa for everyone. So
everybody can get a makeover.
Everyone go get a makeover. It's fine. The Janeway orders Tom to take Voyager down closer. Now, once we get at a certain altitude, that's when Janeway says, fire the first sequence. And now the torpedoes come out, the clouds in the atmosphere light up.
Two magic torpedoes that we don't really have.
Yes. And when the ground shakes, we cut back to the cave. The ground is shaking. There's dirt and stuff kind of falling on us.
And Varen immediately kind of jumping around. Yeah, Varen immediately this is where says, I was worried about James Taylor, by the way, because the James Taylor extra was kind of looking around like, I was worried about James Taylor.
I'm glad you're concerned about James. But Varen thinks that we are attacking them. Otrin says, no, it's a shockwave from the detonations. Mm-hmm. And this goes back and forth to the point where Varen decides that he's going to try to shoot missiles at Voyager. And he starts entering the command sequence to open up the missile silo, at which point Otrin's like, you got to be kidding. What are you doing? And Varen's like, fighting back. So there's a big struggle and
big standoff,
between those two.
Ultimately, Brynn's the mom.
Yeah, she stops it all.
Pulls a rifle
on Varen.
Says, stop. Yeah. And I cheered. Yep. Brynn says, this is our only chance for survival. Varen asks, would you kill me? And she says, yes, to save my child.
Okay. Can I just stop you right here? What is your take on this? Was Brynn Varen's lady? Or not?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Because so not at all then, right? Because no. I felt like there were shades of that going on, maybe. But
they talked a lot.
Okay.
You know, but no, I don't think so.
Okay.
But she says, I'm going to save my child. Varen tells a guard, get that weapon from her. The guard says, no, sir.
Yeah, he turns it on Varen.
That's James Taylor.
That's James Taylor.
Yeah, that's James Taylor.
That's so amazing to have, you know, music legends on our show. It's awesome.
Varen is pissed off. He's like, I took care of all of you. I kept you all alive.
At this point, we have young Yun. Young Yun coming in, not my high school classmate, but young little Yun saying, come outside.
Little girl saying, look, everybody, look outside.
Yes.
They go outside on the planet's surface. The clouds are breaking open. Sunlight is breaking through.
They're getting vitamin D. It's
good. Those kind of rays that come through, I was thinking about, you know, when we're on set, creating that sort of light on a set or a location, the DPs will call that God rays. It's where you put smoke in the room or the set,
right?
You shine a bright light through and it gives those shafts of light.
To make the shafts of light, are they putting flags up to sort of block it in some parts? Or
it's really more about the atmosphere and the smoke. If you have smoke,
the smoke will cause the rays then, correct?
It'll grab the light. That atmosphere will grab the light.
Yes. Yes.
Yun says, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Which it is. Now we've got a captain's log supplemental saying we retrieved Friendship 1 and we've resumed our course to the Alpha Quadrant, but the success of our mission had a very high price. And now we're in Carrie's quarters with Janeway looking at this Voyager model of Voyager in a bottle that Carrie's been working on.
Okay. I know what you were thinking. You were like, this is the Hallmark Voyager.
It's the Hallmark Voyager
decoration. Stuck into a bottle. Basically.
It probably was.
Am I right?
I look like it.
Okay.
You may be right. Here's the other thing I thought.
Yeah.
This show's been, we've been running seven seasons.
Yes. Now. Yes.
And she said, or Chakotay, or one of them said he's been working on this the whole time, and he had one.
No, she said he spent months working on it, not the whole time. He said
he'd been doing it the whole seven years. I'm like, dude, you need to like watch a YouTube video or something how to do this because it's a lot faster. You know,
when Chakotay says Carrie spent months working on it, when he said that, I laughed and I still laughed at that point because I said, no, he didn't. He went on to Amazon and said, Voyager Christmas ornament. And boom, within one day, if he had
Amazon would deliver. And this is not a sponsorship. We're not getting,
no,
it's
we're not
paid. It's not an ad.
Which is joking about the fact that, you know, maybe he used Amazon Galaxy Prime, where he gets sent to even to the Delta
Quadrant.
The actual Voyager ornament.
Yeah.
My gosh.
But she's very sad here. And you know, Janeway and Chakotay talk about the urge to explore and, mm-hmm. you know, the price we pay.
Yeah.
Whether it's one life or millions, there's a high cost. And
yeah.
And it sort of ended abruptly to me. This episode, suddenly, like the way that Janeway sort of, she was kind of mad with that last line. And then it just sort of cut out. I don't know. There's a lot of things I liked about the episode, but that ending felt like they had
cut. Too abrupt.
You know, I wonder
like a missing scene, like a missing dialogue maybe. That they just cut.
I've got a script here.
Let's go look
and see.
Let's go.
This is my script. So the last lines as scripted say, yeah. The urge to explore is pretty powerful, says
correct.
Mm-hmm. He nods, takes a beat, but it can't justify the loss of lives, whether it's millions. Then she looks around the room, the evidence of Carrie's life, or just one, she says. She puts a hand on the bottle, contemplates it, and then she and Chakotay exit. Yeah, I feel like this should have had a shot at the end where she was much slower and sad rather than angry. Mm-hmm. And then if she put her hand, as scripted, put her hand on the bottle and you went to a tight shot of her hand.
Yeah.
And as they walked away out of focus in the background, you just pushed in on that kind of ship with the broken part. But I don't think they did that. I think it was just kind of.
I don't remember them walking out either. I think they're just sitting there and they just talk and that's the end of it. It would have been nice to see them walk out and maybe he puts an arm around her, sort of like, you know, it's all right, you know, kind of a thing, sort of, I'm supporting you there, you know.
By the way, there's a the very end here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see, but it says scene 113 omitted. There was a scene after the exit where they were supposed to exit another scene. And I don't know.
Maybe
what
a walk and talk in the corridor where they sort of further extrapolated or further, you know, went into detail of, or something about Carrie at least.
Yeah.
You know?
So there was something omitted.
I didn't even know that was Carrie's revision. Quarters, to be perfectly honest. I had no clue.
I'm also looking at the script. And so this revision is a goldenrod revision on February 1st. The draft came out on January 31st.
Okay.
But then there were so many revisions immediately.
Yeah.
The same day the draft came out, there was blue revisions. Mm-hmm. The next day, the first, after the first draft came out,
mm-hmm.
there were 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of revisions in one day.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder why that happened.
I don't know. Taylor and Fuller were furiously writing. Right.
4 sets of revisions in a day.
That's definitely
lot.
Rare. We don't usually see that.
In one day.
That's unique.
It probably had something to do with budget. I bet you the budgets came in right when they released the script.
And they were like, can't do that.
We can't afford that. We can't afford
that. Can't do that.
Cut that. I bet you that's what it was.
I believe you. What is your lesson?
There's a lot of lessons in this. But I would say, I agree. I would say my favorite lesson is that, main lesson, I guess, is that sometimes a good intention can have unexpected consequences.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
That's the lesson for me. What about you?
Beware of anger consuming you.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about Varen, you know, he couldn't see, he could not see beyond his anger, right? I mean, everything was about like, look what you've done to us. You've basically committed genocide. There's only 5,000 left of my race.
I hate you. The good in
To me, if I was one of Varen's people, I would say, wait a minute, that probe was sent how many years ago from your planet? 300? Oh, okay. You know, I would take in some of the facts that I've been listening to and say, wait a minute, maybe I need to think a little bit differently. But yeah, so my lesson
actions speak louder than words.
That's another one, right? So you have actions speak louder than words.
He helped the baby. Janeway helped the guy, you know, Otrin.
Yeah. Right. So we have three lessons. Yeah, all right. Your rating.
A lot of lessons.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
My rating for Friendship One is a 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have given this a higher rating because I actually like the concept. I like the story. I liked a lot of things about it.
Mm.
But again, I feel like the performances by the guest cast, not that I would say they're bad. I just felt like they were all sort of
too one note
and one note.
Okay.
And I didn't feel the differentiation of character. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel the highs and lows of the emotions. Mm-hmm. It just felt a lot kind of in the middle, not very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to let the guest star's performance affect my rating. I'm going to give it a little higher. I'm going to go to 8.0.
Wow. So, okay.
I did like this episode.
Here we go. Captain's and Admiral average rating for Friendship One is?
Yes.
7.
7 on the nose.
7.
Okay.
So you and I were both higher on this one.
Than the average.
Okay. So that's Friendship One for this week. What is next week?
Natural Law. So thank you everyone for tuning in to this week's recap and discussion of Friendship One. Join Robbie and I next week when we tackle Natural Law. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.